This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. One of America's top music engineers and producers says hearing the pop punk of the Ramones as a teen changed his life. Steve Albini is a guest lecturer for ISU's Arts and Technology program Friday afternoon at University Galleries in Uptown Normal. Albini has produced albums from bands including Nirvana, The Breeders, The Pixies, and hundreds of others. Albini spoke recently from his electrical audio studio in Chicago about his view of music producing and the music business in general. Of hearing the Ramones as a teen, he said that was his first clue an outsider culture could be a sustainable, real-life experience.
I heard the Ramones sort of accidentally. A friend had been given a tape of a Ramones record by his brother who went away to school. And he played this tape for his friends, and I was in that circle. And my initial reaction to it was, you know, stark laughter. You know, it sounded like people who were trying to play bubblegum music but were inept at it. But they were playing it at the absolute top of their lungs, you know. It was just invigorating to hear it. And then the more I listened to it, it gradually started to resolve into a statement and into a kind of a manifesto. And I suppose it could have been anything, really, that I latched onto, but it happened to be the Ramones, and they gave me the idea that you could have your own particular and perverse view of the world, and you could commit to it fully, and you could get others to come along for the ride, even. For a start, it gave me confidence in my own perverse ideas and my own absurdities, but it also made me take seriously other people and their eccentricities and their quirks and oddities. It made me want to take seriously things that otherwise I might have dismissed as being trivial or absurd.
Let's get to the engineering and producing side of what you do. You are known for someone who doesn't even like the term producer. You like the term engineer applied to your work. Can you explain why engineer works better for you than producer?
The term producer has a connotation of being responsible for the artistic direction of the record. That is, the producer on a record, in a historical sense, was the person who made all the decisions about what was going to happen on the record. This is a good take, that's a bad take. This tempo is correct, that, you know, needs to be faster. Let's add some strings here. In its original sense, the producer would have actually chosen all of the music and all of the musicians and singers to perform on the record. The term has evolved over time, and now a producer often means someone who creates backing tracks and beats, and then those tracks and beats are sort of can be used by anyone, essentially. Like, you could superimpose any vocalist over a pre-recorded backing track. And also, the term producer implies a degree of responsibility to the business interests involved in the record. So if the record label has a producer, then the producer is responsible to the record label for the content of the record. And I just don't do any of those things. I just don't have any of those roles. When a band walks in the door at the studio here, I'm responsible for the technical aspects of the recording. But all of the decisions, all of those artistic decisions and the creative decisions that we've been talking about there, that's all the responsibility of the band. So in a very real sense, the producer of every record I've ever worked on has been the band in question.
Before I ask this question, I'll give you the background. We did a story last year on the four different professional recording studios here in Bloomington Normal, and one of them is a part-time studio because he's the assistant state's attorney, or one of the assistant state's attorneys in town. So when he works with a band, he says, I only work with bands that I really like. Maybe I probably go out and watch your shows even, but I probably really like you as a person. Mm-hmm. Do you have a criteria of working with bands? In other words, do you have to like them?
No, and in to a very real degree, I think it's irresponsible to even form an opinion about the bands that I'm working with. A long time ago, when I was in the punk underground, I or any of my peers' bands would go into the studio. The people running the studios working on the sessions were not very receptive to that kind of music. And so it was like pulling teeth to get them to cooperate with you. Now, bearing in mind that they were operating from best intentions, like they wanted to do a professional job, and so when an unruly group of people came into the studio, their instinct was to try to control that environment and to try to take charge of the situation and normalize things. And so their intentions are good in that respect, but they didn't appreciate that the band had come into the studio with a fully formed aesthetic that they were completely comfortable with. And I don't ever want to do that to one of my clients. I don't want to misread one of my clients, misunderstand their aesthetic, misunderstand their intentions, and try to correct them to suit my worldview, right? Even forming an opinion about whether you like the band or not is the first step toward making a mistake of that nature. I try very hard not to say no. So if someone approaches me about working on a session, my first instinct is to say yes and start working on trying to schedule it. If there is something about the band that I know that will cause me consternation or a problem, I try to clear the air about that before we get into it. So I like to give bands and people credit for having made decisions about their music consciously. Like, they've chosen to make a certain style of music. They've chosen to play in a certain way and to construct their band in a certain way. And those decisions are theirs. And I also don't want anyone who comes into the studio to be wondering whether I like them or not, like whether they're passing the cool test. I feel like that's just an unreasonable amount of pressure or stress to put on somebody in the studio.
Music producer and engineer Steve Albini, our guest on GLT Sound Ideas. He'll be speaking at Illinois State University later this week. I want to ask you about this classic 1993 essay you put out called The Problem with Music. At the time, you listed a number of issues you had with major record labels and major music industry people in general. You used terms like faceless industry lackeys, holding bands hostage with opaque contracts and unfair royalty splits. And as someone who's got a somewhat of a working knowledge of the music business, I think it's spot on, especially for the time. But now you're arguing that record companies today have, well, maybe almost become irrelevant.
To a large degree, record labels are irrelevant now, yeah. If you think about it, the most common way for people to consume music is not by making a trip to the record store and asking the clerk to, you know, find a record for them, you know, and to a greater and greater extent, people are not listening to commercial broadcast radio to hear music. There are delivery media for music that allow every listener to curate their listening experience specifically to their tastes now. So the whole of the industry has shifted away from this sort of top-down mentality where certain important industry figures decide who is going to have access to an audience. Now the audience decides what it wants to listen to of its own accord. And if you want to create music, you can. There's nothing preventing you from going home tonight and recording a few songs on something as simple as your smartphone and then posting them up to YouTube. And if other people like those songs, then, you know, tomorrow morning you have a worldwide audience. That's the kind of access to an audience that previously was only the dominion of people who had very powerful industry contacts. So the record labels and the music business as a whole, as a gatekeeper, really is insignificant now. There are quite a few people who have made substantial careers for themselves just by doing what I just described, by posting their music publicly and letting people find it.
And at the same time, people aren't buying music like they used to, whether it's albums or CDs or even downloads now.
I think the notion that the only way for an audience to interact with a musician is by physically buying a product is an archaic model. Now there are infinitely many ways for people to interact with the music scene and bands and musicians that they want to support. Live performance is you know, the simplest and most obvious one, which is why live music revenue has remained stable and gone up, and why live music venues are still doing quite well. The other ways that people interact with bands are the many sort of audience-driven participation things where people interact. You can interact even quite directly with the musicians and bands that you like by communicating with them through their social media. And if a band needs funding for a project, there are now crowdfunding things that have been used quite successfully by a lot of bands. So the previous industry, which was based on the scarcity model of the physical distribution of media, it's been supplanted by a whole range of interactive options where people can listen to and interact with the people that they like in a much more direct fashion.
We're talking with Steve Albini, the noted producer and music engineer. Well, let me ask you this, Steve. The argument was being made maybe a decade or so roughly ago that if the record companies would have adapted quicker to digital, maybe they would be in a better place than they are right now. Do you buy that argument?
I think that any business based on the scarcity model, that is, that the only way you're going to get this music is by buying it from us, was doomed to failure. And the record labels tried to preserve that operating method far past its expiration date. I don't think there's anything that could be done to salvage an industry that was based on the physical distribution of media when the physical distribution of media was no longer necessary. I don't think anything could have been done to save the record labels. In all honesty, the record labels that have survived are the ones that have been that would have been worth preserving anyway, those that are run by enthusiasts and that offer a carefully curated selection of music for a discerning audience who want physical copies in a hi-fi format. You know, the small independent record labels that cater to a niche market, those record labels have survived. I think that's an audience that will always be well served by that model.